It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome on the phone Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz. Where are you calling from today?
Hey, Mike. I am calling in from Willow.
Willow. Okay, that's perfect. You're up where we need some observations, et cetera. And in the studio, I have two people. I have Mark Kelsey. Long, long awaited return of Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good to be here, Mike.
And also in the studio, sitting beside him, is none other than David Cheesham. Welcome, David.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here. And, of course, the only reason I came is because I knew that Mark was coming back.
So. Right. I appreciate that.
What I'd like to start with is, since we have David in the studio today, is a look at what is happening in the world of biking. For example, today, as we do this, Friday, it's Bike to Work Day in Anchorage. All kinds of things happening there with that. And then last weekend, there was a big series of biking rides in Talkeetna. David, you participated. Talk a little bit about what happened up there.
Oh, gosh. Well, that was an amazing. That was the Clean Air Challenge. And every year, the American Lung Association sponsors this ride. And it's his 35th anniversary ride. And, you know, and they raise funds to deal with all aspects of lung disease. And it looked like it was very successful. It was a little wet, a little cool. But it was great. And it was a great personal thing for me because it's my first century ride. It's the first time I actually made it in time on a 100-mile ride. So that was good. But you didn't have to do, just like the ride we'll talk about in this coming, tomorrow, Saturday, you don't have to do the 100-mile. You could, in Talkeetna, they had a 30-mile and a 60-mile and a 100-mile. And then they had one for the kids. I don't know how long that one was. But it was great. Thing it as somebody who's still new to the bike world, it's really something to get the spirit of the camaraderie of a bunch of bikers riding together and celebrating there. So tomorrow, should we talk about tomorrow?
Yes, please, David. Yeah, go ahead.
Tomorrow is the Palmer Classic, and oh my gosh, it's also an anniversary, but I forget which one. But it's a big. They've been around for a long time, and I'm working on a piece for the radio station. I've interviewed Julie Berberick, and I'm going to interview some of the riders tomorrow. And that's an amazing ride. It started out many years ago, and I'm sorry I don't remember how long, with the Randonneurs, which is still an active group doing with just the longer 100-mile, when the backcountry bike and ski kind of helped out and then eventually took it over, and it became more of a family event. You still have the hardcore riders trying for the longer distances, but you also have the shorter heats, and it's really a great way to celebrate. Biking in Palmer, I think, is working really hard to become a bike-friendly town, and that's a part of that annual celebration, and it grows every year.
Okay, we'll look forward to reporting later on about just how it came off. And Mark, you had a question.
Well, that makes me wonder. Well, and before I wonder, I should say, on a personal level, I have great admiration for anyone who can get on a bike and go 100 miles. I think that's awesome. I'm curious, though, have you sensed that there is more interest in these things now than, say, 10 years ago, or is it the same people?
Oh, I think there's more interest there, and it's part of it. And Julie mentioned this in the interview. A part of it is sort of, if you build it, they will come. The sense of, you know, if you see bike racks in town, if you see paths available, and you see these events, which is actually a national, National Bike to Work Day is a national event that Anchorage is participating in really heavily, but there's other cities around the world. And it's just it's like a snowball effect that people are recognizing that. Some people because it's so healthy, the personal health, and some people are involved for planet health. You know, they, every time you're not driving, your carbon footprint is not as heavy. And some people do it because they are athletes and they like the activity.
Well, and I got a little more serious about the bike. Let's see, it was after knee surgery 10, 12 years ago. My surgeon said, you need to stop the running, the walking, the backpacking, and spend more time on the bike. And it really was a nice change for me.
So much more gentle on your joints.
Zaz, how about you? Are you noticing your coworkers biking to work or your kids or yourself?
I have no coworkers.
Oh, that's right.
I'm here with one skittish sled dog, and she's not going anywhere. So I cannot update you on the status of the Anchorage newsroom of ADN, but we are a little understaffed today, so I think anyone who is going to work has gotten there by their own means. And I remember what it was like to work with coworkers, and it was usually pretty important, I hate to say it, but to have a car, because you never knew what you might have to do, and it would be hard to bike, you know, 3 miles to the crime scene in South Anchorage.
Yes. Yeah, there are some occupations that are easier than others.
Right. You know, well, I'd like to, Mark, you have
one last question before we get off our bikes and park them. The folks who do these big rides, the ones who are super serious and live for these kinds of things, how long are they taking to go 100 miles?
Okay, well, let's see. Some 100 miles, not every 100 mile is equal. I was almost the last. There were four people behind me, that was told, and I took 10 hours. A lot of people were passing me by at the very beginning, and some of those actually did the whole thing.
Wow.
Okay. Well, let's move on. We're aiming our goal, our intention, is to get to what's happening in Juneau and the budget and all the rest of that. But on the way, we have a rest spot, and that is to take a look at local reaction to the end of the series Game of Thrones. I was amazed.
Okay, I might have to leave the room because I have not seen it yet.
No, well, okay.
Yes, same.
Okay, we won't go into the detail. Okay. I'll talk in a general.
I haven't seen any of it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, you have. Let us point this out, though. You represent a tiny minority of people, because this has become the most popularly viewed series at the present time, if not all time. 45 million people, some huge number, have been watching it. But the what's come up with is a very interesting thing. Many of you know that this was built on a series of books that were written. But the Game of Thrones, now in its final season, has gone beyond the books, what happened as described in H.R. Martin's books, right?
Correct.
And so now the showrunners, that's an interesting term. A showrunner is the person who actually creates the show.
Right.
But now there has been a lot of negativity directed at these two people who have done this because of the way the ending was done. And in fact, there is a petition drive out there with upwards of 1 million signatures requesting a redo.
Is there really?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yes. And I'm kind of amazed myself. I know that people have expressed dissatisfaction if they watch a movie, read a book, and so on, but this is fiction. So what we have is we've reached the stage where we ask people to redo the fiction. We don't like the way it was done. And I thought that was fascinating. Any particular reaction? Zaz, did you catch a wind of any of this?
No.
Okay. So now you do, and now you've been brought up to speed. You're woke. Okay.
Well, and first of all, I appreciate Zaz for owning up to not having seen any of it, because I have not seen any of it. I felt a little inadequate, but knowing how popular it is. Is the objection because they departed from the books, or because people just didn't like the ending?
My understanding that much of the dissatisfaction is that through the years of the series build up, very popular, people you might think about this as you watch a movie or a series or read a book, there are characters in the book that you may find yourself relating to. And there's what is referred to as a story arc. the development of a character in a certain direction. And perhaps the whole point of bringing this up is that it relates to our sense of reality, because we know people in our lives, in reality, that have a story arc. And when someone departs from it dramatically, and suddenly that doesn't fit, that's unexpected. How could they do this? Well, in this case, because it is a fictional character, someone has created them and is moving along in a story arc, which is it's to good purpose, because you retain an audience doing that. But then you reach a point where essentially now very, very competent people in terms of their knowledge of the series react by saying, you know, that doesn't fit the story arc. You've done a bad job of writing here. You've just finishing this up because you wanted to get it done, but you really haven't. You don't understand the character. We understand the character because we've been living with this character. David, you're involved in literature in a bit. What do you think?
Having not watched the last one, I've seen a lot of comments on Twitter, especially Twitter, from a range of points of view, from people who have always been attached to one of the characters, and I've seen people who have not been attached to one of the characters and have been very critical of it. But, you know, that has been part of the series all along. It has been the subject, you know, it's been very popular, but there has been criticism of there's something in every season that has raised the ire of the popular, and that's probably part of the success of the series, is that it people are committed to it, and even when they are angrily responding to it, it's like, you might like me, you might hate me, but you're watching.
You've got that.
Present company excluded.
Well, this is an interesting segue, because I'll make one other comment about it. We run a series on the show. Steve Pomerantz does a finance series. He's very good. Today's show, what he did was something that indicated the penetration of Game of Thrones. And what he did was he went through the 7 mistakes of financial planners or planning by individuals as represented by what happened in Game of Thrones. And the reason why I mentioned that is because I listened to them and I said, yes, he's captured for those people who are familiar with Game of Thrones. He has made a way of understanding something about financial planning that would have been difficult to grab if he hadn't done that. And I just point out the penetration of Game of Thrones into popular culture is pretty interesting.
Okay, I will say that my own personal financial planning has not improved because of the time I spent watching
that. Okay, well, you have to finish the series.
Okay, there we go. Then that'll change.
All right, now let's slip on here to say reality as represented by what is happening in Juneau, as the legislature has completed its first 121-day session, has been called immediately back into session for a special session for 30 days. I'm not suggesting that we try to interpret it in terms of Game of Thrones, but...
We don't often use the word reality in relation to Juneau either.
Okay. So whoever the showrunners are who have been designing what's happening in Juneau, once it's all finished, I suspect there are people who will be satisfied and others that won't be satisfied, and so on.
Good but, segue.
Yes, but let us bring us up to date onto what's happening. I watched carefully, gavel to gavel, and I expected them to start out sort of slowly on the first day after the special session began. But lo and behold, it turns out that the conference committee that was focused on the criminal justice activity, the repeal essentially of SB 91, completed its work. And they shook hands, they were happy, and they did this in a couple hours. And now it goes to the House and Senate to be approved in floor sessions, and presumably would be. This was a conference committee. And then one of the major topics has been completed, and now they only have to work on a few others, like educational funding, as well as the permanent fund dividend check, as well as the capital budget.
And does anybody get any different sense than I do? It seems like it's a done deal. It's just, take the vote, count the votes, and be done. Is anybody sensing there still be a curveball?
Well, it, only in this sense. To remind listeners that the difficulty with educational funding, because the governor said, okay, the numbers are okay. If you pass a educational funding bill this session and that we don't use the numbers, same numbers, that were done last session in forward funding. The legislature has, and the leaders there, have said, no, we have already taken care of that. We're not going to redo the bill. So the issue swirls around whether you can have forward funding on education or you can do a two-year bill, et cetera. Some people would suggest this is an opportunity for, say, the governor or other members to retain control to the last minute of educational funding. That if you give it up with a two-year, you're saying, well, that's not going to be in play. Okay, so we'll see how that plays out. And right now, it looks like there's a considerable discussion to be remaining about that.
Well, and to be clear, which I was not, my question was about the crime bill. That seems like a done deal.
Yeah, that one is, yes. Go on, if I missed that, that's true. The permanent fund dividend number, I've taken to asking people who are knowledgeable, perhaps who have been lobbyists, who have been down there before. And I ask a simple question, pick a number, what do you think? Is it going to be 3,000, 1,500, or what? I'm beginning to get a sense that it's going to be 1,500. It's not going to be $3,000 because when it's all said and done, there's going to be some interesting questions about money, where it comes from to pay for things.
Well, and that's been the big question all along anyway. It does not seem to me that 3,000 is a responsible place to settle.
And it's notable that the constitutional changes are not really in this package. So we're not going. I think it's been come recognized that in order to do the constitutional changes the governor had originally wanted, you're going to have to take more time, and that's not going to be happening.
Well, and there was not a whole lot of support for that anyway.
Right. And we've mentioned in the past that Vic Fisher, the last remaining representative to the Constitutional Convention that actually put together Alaska's Constitution, spoke for an hour to House Committee on State Affairs, and he was very persuasive, pointing out that I think the legislature responsibility was to put together a constitutional change if they so desired and present it to the people. And the suggestions coming from the governor were just that. The legislature was really the responsible body. The governor couldn't, for example, say, I want to put this on the ballot. He couldn't do it by himself. And that's maybe an important thing to say. Well, one of the things that I noted, and it appeared in the Anchorage Daily News recently, was a very powerful article, in my opinion, written by two high school students, one the valedictorian in 2014 and the other valedictorian in 2016, one graduating from Ketchikan High School, the other from Service High School, one a graduate now of the Naval Academy in a graduate program, and the other studying at Harvard University. Now, the reason why I bring these up is because I've been hearing, perhaps you have as well, people who have said that the educational system in the state of Alaska doesn't do very well. And these two very successful people spoke to the value that they found in these two different communities, one in the far southeast, one up here in Anchorage, and said, you know, we would not have gone on if it had not been for a very fine educational system, rather small system, larger system, and the individual teachers involved. I would submit that their writing was incredibly clear, spoke with passion, and they basically said it's critically important to support such an educational system that will serve all students. And I thought it was a very valid statement backed up by a number of good references that maybe undercut the idea that the educational system in the state of Alaska is not doing very well, which is sometimes a thing that is said. Zaz, any comment?
Yeah, I think that was a very powerful message that's resonated with a lot of people. And I think in Alaska, as in most, if not all states, there are certain formulas that make for a good education, and kind of chief among those formulas are good teachers and people with a natural gift to not only educate young people, but to keep them captivated and prompt them to think for themselves. And I think what on the flip side, what we know doesn't work is classroom size. I mean, there are certain formulas that you can plug in and know that education will be compromised. And so I think it's a double-edged sword. I think there are any number of great teachers here in Alaska, but if they're teaching in the classroom with, you know, 41 students, that's a huge hurdle.
Right. Okay.
It's very easy to focus on the bad numbers, especially if you're opposed or a critic of public education. We hear the same stats quoted over and over. Very easy to focus on that stuff. We do need to spend more time, though, realizing that there's plenty of good done and plenty of, you know, students who come out of the system and are healthy, productive citizens afterwards. So there is plenty of good, despite the fact that we clearly have work to do in some spots.
And perhaps the article resonates at this moment because here in the Mat-Su School District, as well as other places, because of a lack of certainty in terms of funding through to the borough and on to the school district, many teachers are receiving a non-retention notice, often called a pink slip, with a letter of intent that goes along to say, should we receive the funding we hope to receive, you know, you're back in the game. But this is a large number of people who have perhaps begun to establish themselves, not just a first-year teacher, been here for a few years, doesn't yet have tenure. And this has got to be both psychologically and in many ways troubling to say, I've done everything I'm needed. I'm able to do the job. I like doing the job. And yet, because there's been this inability, put it this way, of the legislature to come to terms with the governor to do funding in a timely manner. This has been one of the things that has been most looked at, the timeliness factor. And especially as you go to 121 days and another 30 days and begin to say, okay, what does this take? We know that for the 30-day session, it's interesting. Last year, there was a rule passed that said you don't receive per diem, the daily per diem, until the end of the session when you've done your work. And I suspect more and more people are saying, you know, if you cannot complete this, yes, there's the ultimate result that you can be voted out of office. But short of that, perhaps there are some other incentives that would be useful to say, get it done in a timely fashion.
Well, yeah, and it's just my first thought when you brought up the pink slips was is there any other profession like this? Would your doctor continue to serve if they were every year or every other year they were going to get a slip saying we might not
have the money to fund your operation,
right? And would you know a lawyer work like that? And they wouldn't, and so it's just another sign that we don't value this crucial part of democratic experiment of a society that is built on public participation. That means public education. That's what it is.
Okay. Well, Zaz, I appreciate you calling in today. Are there any last comments you may like to make about articles you're working on before we finish up?
It's been a grim week for most news reporters and especially for the residents of Ketchikan and family of the people involved in that midair collision on Monday. So that's where most of our attention has gone this week. And I think I know there'll be additional reporting to be done, both in terms of updates on the people involved, but also on kind of the larger questions raised by this, which certainly wasn't the first tragic fatal crash involving cruise ship passengers and flight sea tours.
Got it. Right. Well, I want to thank you, Zaz, for calling in and participating in this week's Valley Edition. Thank you.
Good to be here.
And I want to thank both Mark and David for coming into the studio on a beautiful sunny day and also sharing for Valley Edition. Thank you, Mark.
It's been my pleasure to be back.
And thank you, David.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.